Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on June 17th, 2017. This is episode 1,396. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Wistia, the video hosting platform that powers creative communication for more than 300,000 businesses. Start your free account today at wistia.com. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage, to let you apply simply and understand the mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy.
Well, hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's on a well-deserved vacation to, among other places, Machu Picchu and the Galapagos. Wow, those are two places on my bucket list for sure. But for the moment, there is no place I would rather be than sitting right here talking to all you fine folks. And I want to wish all you fathers out there Happy Father's Day tomorrow. I hope that you're going to spend a wonderful day with your family and your kids, and hopefully they'll get you something cool. And if something cool is an audio or video product, a TV, some speakers, something cool like that, all the better. And if you get something like that and you don't know how to set it up or hook it up or do anything like that, then give me a call. Today is the day for that. You know, of course, that Leo talks about everything with a chip in it, right? As he says, anything technological. And I love all that stuff. I listen to the show. I would listen to the show anyway, even if I weren't part of it. But my particular specialty is audio and video. Now, I'm the home theater geek, but I can also talk about a wide range of audio and video topics, including home theater, of course, big screen TV, surround sound, Blu-ray, Ultra HD, all that stuff, but also commercial cinema, live concert sound, recording studios. So if you have any kind of question like that on any such topic, then please give me a call. The number, as always, is 8888-ASK-LEO, which for you alphabetically impaired folks such as myself is 888-827-5536. And if you want to find out more, of course, we also have our webpage, techguylabs.com. James DeRuvo is writing everything down, and we'll post it on that website. And you can go and check out segment by segment, question by question, and find more information. You can also leave comments there. If something I say isn't quite right, or you disagree, or something or another, you can say, hey, that wasn't right. It's this. And that's perfectly fine. We love it when you do that, in fact. So we're going to get to calls pretty soon. But before we do, I wanted to talk a little bit about the big news of the week, which for my world is the introduction of the Microsoft Xbox One X, which was premiered at the E3 convention last week in Los Angeles. That's the big gaming convention. And I have to say that I'm not a big gamer myself. I never got into video games except once. In the 80s, I had a job in the Bay Area here when I was living here. And at lunch, I would go next door to the 7-Eleven and play Ms. Pac-Man, if those of you who are old enough will remember that game. And I kind of got addicted to that for a little while. And in fact, that was kind of what led me to say, you know what, I shouldn't be playing video games because it's just too addictive. It takes too much time, and I've got too much else to do. But times change, and now we have these consoles that are super powerful, and the Xbox One X is the most powerful one of all. It's Microsoft claims it's 40% more powerful than any other game console out there. It's also smaller, somewhat heavier, but it's a real powerhouse. And it has a number of great features, including, most important to me, a UHD Blu-ray player. Now, most of you probably know about Blu-rays. You probably certainly know about DVDs. These are the optical discs on which you can purchase TV shows, movies, stuff like that. DVD is standard definition. That's well over 10 years old now. Blu-ray is now about 10 years old. That's high definition. And what we now have is ultra-high definition, which is four times the number of pixels on the screen as Blu-ray or high definition. And I've always said that the number of pixels on the screen, once you get past a certain point, is not that critical. You know, when we went from standard definition, DVD, to high definition, Blu-ray, there was a big difference in quality, and you could really see it. It was very important. But moving from high definition to ultra-high definition, or UHD, you know, unless you're sitting really close to the screen, you don't really necessarily see such an advantage to the extra pixels. Now, what UHD does bring to the table that makes a huge difference is what's called high dynamic range, or HDR. Now, high dynamic range is really the difference between the deepest black and the brightest white. And with standard definition and high definition, that range was a certain range. We'll call it 0 to 100. And whatever the TV could do in terms of its deepest black was what it was. Now we have high dynamic range, which goes from 0 to 1,000. Actually, technically, it could go from 0 to 10,000. But no, there's no display that can display that bright. So most movies in high dynamic range are created or mastered or graded, as it's called, to 1,000. And these numbers I'm using refer to the brightness. And the brightness of the TV is measured in technical terms, candelas per meter squared. But we like to use another term, which is synonymous. It's called nits. Very easy to remember. So standard dynamic range went from roughly zero, whatever the TV could do at the bottom end, to 100 nits at the top. And all content was mastered to that, and it was very easy. If you set your TV up properly, you could reproduce what the director intended exactly. Now we have high dynamic range. And high dynamic range can go up to 10,000, as I said, 10,000 nits. But no TV can do that. No mastering monitor can do that. The most that mastering monitors can do is 4,000 nits. Most of them top out at 1,000. And high dynamic range TVs, if they're of the LCD variety, can also typically reach 1,000 nits. So good for them. That's great. That's a nice match. OLED TVs, the other type of flat panel TV that's common today, can only go up to 600-700 nits. And so they have to kind of roll off the top end. High dynamic range really gives us another level of complexity, I'm sorry to say. Not necessarily for the consumer, although it's valuable for the consumer to understand these things, at least at a conceptual level, because that way you can set up your TV as best it can be in order to watch this high dynamic range. And you really want to do that because the beauty of the image is significantly enhanced over standard dynamic range. Now, you can see this if you don't have a high dynamic range TV in your living room or in your home theater. You can go out to a movie theater called a Dolby Cinema and see it there. They have a beautiful high dynamic range image there. It's the only place in the commercial cinema world where you can see it. But I recommend you go find one if you can. And I maintain a list of those theaters. They're getting close to 100, I think, now in the U.S. There's at least 60 in various places around the country, and a few in Europe and a bunch in China, where you can see this high dynamic range. And I really encourage you to go see it because it really is stunning. It's just beautiful. And I forget what's in there right now. It might be Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman in high dynamic range, gorgeous. Great movie, by the way. But in high dynamic range, holy smokes, it's really beautiful. Just great. So that's what I recommend. But now I want to take your calls, and we'll do that right after the break. And all you have to do is call 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. And we'll be back right after this break and start taking your calls. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I have got Jim in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
How can I help you?
I have a 15-year-old Pioneer rear projection.
Yeah, that's an old one, all right.
I enjoy it from the point of view that it has picture-in-picture with, like, three separate inputs. But I'm like the upgrade to a modern-day UHD set, mm-hmm. 65 to 75 inches, that gives me a split-screen 50-50 picture-in-picture. Are they available?
Not nearly as much as they used to be. A lot of TV manufacturers have dropped picture-in-picture. I will have to look and see if I can find any that that actually do have picture-in-picture, because these days, wait a second now, I'm just trying to find Google here where I will be able to see if I can find one. Picture-in-picture TV.
Let's see. Google usually is something from 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you this. What's your price range? What's your budget?
Up to $3,000.
Oh, well, that's a pretty healthy budget. Let's see. Are there any current TVs that include a PIP feature? CNET has an interesting article on this. Let's see. Oh, it's a discussion. I see what you're saying. Okay.
Have picture in picture, but it's usually the main input, and then the second input is a small screen that you can move around.
Oh, and you're talking about actually splitting the screen. I don't think I know of any TVs that can do that.
In the last year, Sony, I saw one had that. I don't know if the current ones do.
I don't think so. Let me look up split screen. TV and see if I can find any there. That would be more in the computer monitor side of things, but you're talking about a real TV. You're talking about a giant 65, 75 inch TV.
Right. Even Vizio now, they've dropped the tuners from them, so yep. Those are all monitors.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Being able to get inputs, like I have a roof antenna,
mm-hmm.
I have boxes. And I like to be able to pick and choose from those three inputs. And I like to watch a news show and on one side of the screen and a sports on the other side.
Man, I don't know about you, but I have such a hard time multitasking myself. That would drive me nuts. but not you, obviously. So let's see if we can help you out here.
Easily with the news, I need a distraction.
All right, I got you. You know what? I'm going to have to do a little research on this, so keep listening, and let me see if I can find anything. And if I do, I will definitely let you know. One thing that comes up here is an external processor. Now, if you get an external processor, those can be pretty expensive, like in the thousand or thousands of dollars. They might very well be able to do it. But you know what? I need to do a little research on this, so I hope you'll keep listening, and I will find an answer and hopefully be able to share it with you a little bit later in the show. But now that I know what you need to do, you want to see a split screen. You want to see two things on either side of the screen. One problem with that, I'll tell you right away, is that they'll both be clipped. They'll both be cropped, I should say, because you won't see the full shape of the screen that you need to. The screen is 16 by 9. That's its aspect ratio. 16 units across by 9 units down. So that's what the shape of the screen is. And if you split that in two, most TV signals have that same shape. But if you split it in two, you're cutting each image in half. And so that's a little weird. Now, with an Ultra HD TV, I have seen demos where you can put four things up in the screen at the same time, and they keep their aspect ratio because Ultra HD is exactly four times the number of pixels as HD. So it's twice as many pixels vertically, horizontally, and twice as many vertically. So you can split that into four screens and see each one in its full aspect ratio. Would that be of interest to you to see four pictures at once?
I have seen the display by screens, which was at the Consumer Electronics Show, in which a little box, it's only a couple hundred dollars, and divide the screen. I thought it was up to four.
It is. I mean, it's four. A UHD screen can be divided into four HD screens. So each of those four segments on the screen would be high definition, not ultra high definition. And if there was a processor that's only a couple hundred bucks, then that's something I need to know about. So I'm going to look for that and see if I can help you out with that a little bit later in the show. So keep listening and let me see what I can find out, will you?
Okay. I believe the device was called Screens.
Just Screens.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I will look for that. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Okay. Let us go to... let me see. Who can I? Here we go. I'm going to go with number five. That is Jim in San Clemente, California. Hey, Jim. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. How you doing?
Hey, Scott. Doing great. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
And I really enjoy your podcast.
Thank you so much.
Oh, keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Hey, I've got a Vizio 65-inch TV, and I want to put in a... speakers onto it, sound bar primarily.
Good for you.
And
good
I was
call.
Wondering if I want to try to stay away from multi remote controls.
You and everybody else, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm wondering, you know, I've got Cox as my carrier, you know, for the TV. And I don't know if, do the carriers allow you to use their remote control to attach on to a third-party
Usually so. Speaker? Yeah, usually so.
Oh, okay.
Now the programming of the remote in order to control other devices is not necessarily a trivial thing.
Right.
Now, when they installed the cable box, the Cox cable box, did they set up your remote so that it controlled the Vizio TV?
I did that.
Oh, you did that. Oh, okay. Well,
yeah,
then you're technically inclined enough.
Yeah, yeah. I figured it out, and then of course the box didn't work after 3 days. So I programmed it, and you know you have to program. You know, I've got three boxes, so I had to program three TVs, and one was Sony, one's Vizio, and the other one was something else.
Very technically astute.
That's great, because I was just thinking here as I was on my way in. And I was thinking, hey, I wonder if I can do that, because otherwise, you know, I've got 15 remote controls.
Oh,
right,
man.
A couple of them. I'm not even sure where they go to.
They multiply like rabbits, I tell you.
Yeah.
But you've already solved the problem to some degree, and it'll be very easy to add a sound bar and add control for it to the remote control that you're already using. The other option is to get a true universal remote control from Logitech. Harmony is my favorite one.
Right.
And that would also be very easy to program to control all your stuff. As far as a soundbar is concerned, Vizio makes great soundbars, so they would pair very beautifully with that TV. Thanks so much for calling. I really appreciate it. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. In our last segment, we were talking about split screen, and folks in the chat room, who, by the way, are wonderful, Leo calls them his brain, and I have to do the same, I'm afraid, because there's many of them in there, and you can join them, and I hope you do. Just go to techguylabs.com, and you should be able to join the chat room there directly, or at irc.twit.tv, and you can help me answer questions. And generally, kibitz in the back of the room, as Leo says, they're the kids in the back of the room who know all the answers. But in the meantime, I'm going to go to another call. Let's see. Ooh, one of my favorite topics is OLED TV. And so I'm going to talk to Susan in LA. Hey, Susan. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm in the market for an LG OLED TV.
Mm-hmm.
And LG sells a C model now and a P model. And now Costco has a B model.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that the B at Costco is the same as C from Best Buy or directly from LG, and I want to know if there is any difference, and what would I get if I go all the way to the P model?
Well, I think you're mixing a couple of brands up here, because LG actually does not make a P. They make a B7, as you say, which is a Costco brand, a Costco model, C7. Which is the generally available lower cost model. They also make an E7, a G7, and a W7. Those are the five models of LG OLEDs current, the 2017 models, which I definitely recommend. I just finished my review of the C7 on avsforum.com and on my podcast. We talked about it there as well last week. And you asked the question, difference between the B7 and the C7, virtually no difference at all. The B7 is what's called a captive model. So it's only at Costco and maybe a couple other big box retailers. The C7 is more widely available, but it's also their kind of lower cost OLED TV. The good news is, the LG just reduced the prices of all their OLED TVs by quite a bit, like last week. And so your timing is good, really good. I would say it doesn't matter, the B7 at Costco or the C7 at a Best Buy or someplace like that. They're going to be about the same. The really cool thing about LG OLED TVs is that all of them, from the least expensive to the most expensive, use exactly the same OLED panel, that is the glass, the actual panel itself, it's all the same. And the video processing is all the same. The only difference between them is cosmetics. I believe the B and the C might be a little different in cosmetics, slightly. One might have a silver bezel and the other might have a black bezel. I forget exactly what it is, but it's okay. Very minor, very minor.
Well, I was interested in jumping up above the C because I was told that, see, I thought it was a P, as in Paul, when I looked on LG's website.
Nope.
So there is a model that comes with the sound bar.
Yes.
Built in.
Built in, not separate.
I wouldn't have to buy a separate soundbar.
Right. Well, I know that the W7 does, but that's the highest cost, expensive one.
Oh.
And it can you have only one option. You must mount it on the wall. You can't put it on a stand. Now, are you going to wall mount or are you going to?
Oh, definitely wall mount.
Oh, okay. Well, then you could get the W7 if you wanted to. That would be mightily expensive, but I believe we're talking, I think the 65-incher is on the order of $8,000.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Nothing lower than the W has the built-in soundbar, then.
Well, no, the W has a separate soundbar. It actually has one that's separate. Now, to get one that's built in, I'm just looking up here LG OLED TVs, And they all have their sound built in. The C7 has an okay built-in sound system. And I think you would get better performance if you moved up to the E. The E7 is okay. The one, the next one up. And the E7, what size are you looking at? 55 or 65?
Probably the 65. Mm-hmm. If I went with the E, I would not need to also buy a sound bar. I'd get good enough sound.
Good enough is in the ear of the beholder, isn't it?
Yeah, I have a small room, so it isn't
It would probably be fine. It would probably be fine. You said a 65 you were looking at?
Yes, so they've dropped the prices?
They have. The 65 E7 is now $4,500. And the 55 is $3,500. So it's not cheap. OLED TVs
are not
cheap, but they are my favorite type of TV by far. They don't get as bright as LCD TVs, but they get blacker, they get darker, they get deeper into black, which is more important to me. Now, let me ask you this. Are you watching in a room where you can control the amount of light that's in the room, what's called ambient light?
Yes.
Great.
I can brighten it or darken it.
Then OLED is my preferred type of flat panel TV. No question about it. More expensive.
I know, but I'm willing for the one-time investment.
There you go.
For years. A little other question. I have also heard that you have to buy, my TV now is mounted with the bracket thing on the wall and the wires are hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand for these that I need to buy LG mounting equipment. Is that true?
Ooh, that's a good question. I was under the impression that the LG OLED TVs used a standard type of mount called a VESA mount, VESA. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I thought that they used it. And if you have a TV that's mounted that way now, then
I don't know because it's 7 years old. Okay, but I need a VESA mount.
Well, I'm looking at that. Yes, exactly. The LG E7 uses a VESA mount, VESA, and they specify it as 300 by 300. I don't know quite what that means, but that is part of the tech specs on the E7. But it's a pretty standard type of wall mount, so you might already have it. If you don't, then that's the kind
that.
that's the kind of mount you need. And go ahead.
The last part of my question is: my son, when he lived at home, who is an engineer, bought a Logitech remote control.
Yes.
So my components are inside a cabinet, and the Logitech remote, it's got those little devices.
They're called IR blasters.
Blasters, that's right.
Yep.
The LG TV, is its remote control IR?
Yes, its remote control is IR. And it should you should be able to integrate the LG's control into that Logitech Harmony remote, no problem at all.
Or I could use the LG remote as my new IR remote if it will recognize my cable box.
Well, yeah, it'd be a little harder to program it, I think. If I were you, I'd put the LG's control into the Logitech.
Okay.
That's what I would do.
All right. I think that answers my question.
Thank you so much. You bet.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. This is Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek, back after this.
The Tech Guy Podcast brought to you today by Wistia. This brand new sponsor, maybe I should explain what they are. I think a lot of companies, maybe yours, do business video for marketing, for training, for communications. And I think the first inclination probably, let's put it on YouTube. Why not? Free hosting, right? But it's not the best platform for business video. The best platform for business video is Wistia. It's a video hosting platform with analytics, with video marketing tools, that power creative communications for more than 300,000 businesses. They chose Wistia because Wistia does everything you need for business, and you know the environment. You control the environment. You can have a branded video player, which is really important. You know, it's the difference between, you wouldn't have your business's email address at AOL.com, would you? No. You'd have your domain name. It's the same thing. Don't let somebody else host your video. Host it at Wistia. You also get so much more information about the people who are watching. Detailed analytics, so you can know how your videos are performing. I mean, things like heat maps would show what people are looking at. Trend graphs, engagement graphs. You can capture email addresses within your video. With Wistia, using video throughout your business couldn't be easier. It integrates with marketing automation software you already use, like Marketo and Pardo. Wistia offers friendly support service people who are available whenever you need it, and free resources to enable you to use video across your business, even if you've never made a video before. They make it easy. And you know who uses Wistia? Big, big companies. Starbucks uses it for their marketing and training videos. Cirque du Soleil, HubSpot. HubSpot uses Wistia as their video hosting platform. Increase visibility, boost conversion rates, power your sales team with Wistia. And you know what? It's easy to get your toe wet, to dip your toe in Wistia, because your first three videos are free. A free account at WISTIA.com. You get three video uploads. You get advanced video analytics. Get all the features and integrations built with business in mind. You can see what Wistia can do for you. So try it right now. Go to Wistia. WISTIA.com. And we thank Wistia so much for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Now on with the show.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo's on a well-deserved vacation, and he asked me to come sit in his chair, actually on his ball here, and answer questions about home theater, which I'm always so happy to do. You can give us a call if you like, if you have a question for us, and that number is 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. And we got a full slate here, almost, anyway, so I'm going to go right back to the calls, and I am going to go to Jeremy in Costa Mesa. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. I always enjoy hearing you on Leo's show.
Oh, thanks.
I am a cord cutter, and I'm dependent on an over-the-air digital antenna. Mm-hmm. I also live in an apartment in Costa Mesa, California, so I'm 35 miles from the nexus of over-the-air signals, Mount Wilson, California.
Mm-hmm.
And I have bought what I thought was a good quality indoor over-the-air antenna.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the infinity sign vertically, and it's got like a T-bar on top of it, and a sort of a framework of metal.
Who made it?
Antennas Direct.
Oh, that was a distributor or the retailer.
Okay.
It might be a Mohu or a Weingard or something like that. Anyway, go ahead.
Have anybody else's name on it?
Mm.
But the bottom line is, it works great on UHF, which in the LA market includes channels 2 through 5, since the digital conversion, those
mm-hmm.
are now broadcasting on UHF.
Yep.
But 7 through 13, totally gone. And I've been on antennaweb.com.
Good. That's my first suggestion.
I tried to align it. I tried to make sure all the connections are tight.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, it works beautifully for the UHF. I got on the phone to the antenna distributor, and they said, well, the VHF section of that is a 30-mile antenna, and you're 35 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm like
just
science theater. I'm a fringy.
Yes, indeed, you are. I'm afraid so.
So what do I do? What's the most efficient?
Well, that's tough.
Effective way to solve this problem.
You're in an apartment building, so you. I don't know. Can you put a rooftop antenna?
No, not at all. Only the small satellite dishes are allowed here. No other antenna.
Okay. Do you have a window that actually faces in the direction of Mount Wilson, which would be, in your case, roughly east?
Yeah, I'm lucky enough that there's a sliding glass door, and it seems to make no difference if I open the door or the screen.
That's not what I was at. I was not thinking about opening the door. I was just thinking about a lot of these antennas. Is this a stand-mounted tabletop-type antenna or something you actually attach to the wall or the window?
It has brackets that you could attach to the wall of the window, but I have it sitting on top of a subwoofer right now.
Uh-huh. Have you tried putting that antenna right next to the sliding glass door that's facing east?
I have not. That plays havoc with the decor of the room. Just while I'm watching.
Yeah. Well, you know, that would be the only thing I could recommend. The other thing would be possibly an amplified antenna. Although if the antenna is only catching 30 miles and the transmitter's 35 miles away, it's going to be amplifying noise. So there might not be any advantage to getting an amplified antenna at that point.
Right. They make larger versions, but again, that plays havoc with the decor.
You know,
I have a young lady visitor here that makes them think I'm even more of a geek than I am.
Than you already are. I think that's the only solution you're going to have. Now, there is one other solution that really has nothing to do at all with over the air. You could abandon that antenna entirely if you went for live TV streaming. And there are four services now that I know of that do that. PlayStation View, DirecTV Now, Sling TV, and Hulu TV. And I would go do some research on those to find out which, and they, some of them at least two of them, I can't remember which ones at the top of my head, do local channels as well. And it sounds to me like you're interested in local channels.
Yes, I am interested in local channels.
So I would go look at those four services, and they all have different packages. They not only, if they have local channels, those are the ones you want to look at, but they also have things like Discovery and Learning Channel and other stuff like that in different packages, right? So you'll have the low cost package will have fewer channels, and then as you move up in price, and they cost on the order of as I recall $50 up to $100, something along those lines per month. It ain't cheap.
That's right, back to the cable world.
It really is. Yeah, I agree. But it's streaming.
Okay.
And if your antenna doesn't work, you're going to have to do something.
Right.
And in the chat room, I've seen here already that signal boosters might be a good idea. Lumpy says, I have a signal booster to get my channels that are a longer distance away. Mike Heiss, my good friend who hangs out in the chat room and is very, very knowledgeable. Let's see. I have what the caller is talking about, he says. Antennas Direct is the manufacturer. Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yep.
My suggestion, get a small amp, VHF here, really touchy for some channels. Okay. So an antenna amplifier might be something worth looking into.
Okay.
And particularly, you know, these live streaming services, you're back to paying something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
well, that's the thing, though, is there a signal in there that's tiny that's just not making it to the TV
mm-hmm.
picture, or is it noise, like you say? That's the question.
Ultra Aqua is saying, I'm doing the same thing, using a Philips fin-shaped antenna, works great, about $40, comes with an amp with the cable assembly.
Okay.
So there you go. A couple people are reminding me also, YouTube TV. Sorry?
Fin, T-H-I-N?
Fin, as in a shark fin.
Fin, okay.
And made by Philips.
Okay.
Fin-shaped antenna. I would suggest probably your best bet is to look for an antenna that has an amplifier built in. And that may, you know, now I'm seeing in the chat room some people are doing the same thing. Web 4087 says DirecTV Now does provide local channels, so that is another option.
I had
for you.
I had cable, and I was spending over $100 a month and barely watching it. So free buying the one-time cost of the antenna is very, very tempting.
I think the thing to do is to find an antenna that has a longer range, ultimately. Lawn Dog in the chat room is agreeing with me. If you have no signal or a weak signal and you install an amplifier, all you're doing is amplifying the noise.
That's what you said, yeah.
So you have to get an antenna that can reach out farther. I think that would be the thing to start with. And maybe to look at this Philips Thin.
Okay, Philips Thin.
Yep.
Okay, thanks. Oh, one quick question. How do I keep alkaline batteries from destroying my remotes?
Change them regularly.
Like what, first, check them the first of every month?
Something like that, yeah. Okay. They leak. They tend to leak, right? You get this crud all around them.
What's that about? You can ruin something that's...
You really can, believe me. I've ruined plenty of remotes that way myself. You forget about it. It's so easy. You just, you know, you have your remote. It's sitting there. It works fine. And then suddenly it doesn't. And you think, oh, maybe I need to change the batteries. And you open up the battery case, and it's full of that crud.
Right.
And you just go, ugh. So... You know, if you're, I would check, I don't think every month you probably need to check, but maybe every 6 months or 4 months, maybe three or four times a year, maybe something like that, if you can remember.
I know, that's a problem.
It's a real problem, isn't it?
Right, it is.
Yeah. All right, hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you so much, Scott.
All right. You know, before we take another call, I just wanted to mention a couple things from last hour. One, and I'm going to have to do that at the top of this at the next break there. So this is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this. Hey everybody, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Before we get to the next question, I just wanted to follow up on a couple of calls we had earlier. One was from someone who wanted to watch a split screen. Apparently, he is able to multitask, which I'm not, and he wanted to watch two or more pictures on the screen as well. And I was trying to remember a little box that could do it. And someone in the chat room, thank you, chat room, always definitely part of my brain, they reminded me of the 4SE TV. That's the numeral 4, the letters SE TV, that will do that. It will split the signal into four different 1080p signals and put them in the four quadrants of your 4K Ultra HD TV. And it's only $179. So it tickled my brain that I kind of remembered that. I saw it maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and that was long enough ago that my brain, being a FIFO buffer, first in, first out, couldn't quite pick up right away. But thank you, chat room, for reminding me of that. The other thing I wanted to add on to my response to Susan, who was looking for an OLED TV, my favorite kind of flat panel TV, and she was looking at the LG E7 65-inch for $4,500, and she wanted a good sound to come out of the TV without having to have a separate soundbar. And I totally forgot, and once again, the chat room reminded me, and thank you so much for that, that at that price, if you're going to spend $4,500, I would seriously consider upping your budget $500 to $5,000 for the Sony A1E OLED TV. Now, it's also a beautiful OLED TV, uses the same LG glass, the same raw panel that's in the LG. Its primary claim to fame is that it has really good onboard sound using a very interesting technology. They call it acoustic surface. And what it is two small transducers, little vibrators that vibrate according to the audio signal, just like a speaker, but they're connected to the back of the panel. And the actual panel itself vibrates and sends sound into the room. Now, you might say, that can't possibly sound any good. And you might say, it's going to disturb the image. The vibrating screen is going to make the image look like it's vibrating. No, I have spent a lot of time with the Sony A1E OLED, and I can tell you that it doesn't do either one. It sounds really good, the best onboard TV sound I've heard, in fact, and it doesn't jiggle the picture. You don't see it working, primarily because it takes the higher frequencies of sound and produces them from the TV in just exactly that way. The lower frequencies, if it were to reproduce the lower frequencies of sound, you would be able to see that. So it it uses what's called a crossover to take the sound, the lower frequencies, to a what they call a subwoofer. It's not really a subwoofer. It's a woofer. It's in the stand itself, and that is what produces the low frequencies. So it sounds great, I have to say. And if you're willing to up your budget a little bit, you would get really, really good sound. Now, the wall mounting, you are also going to wall mount it, and that might be something of a problem. You might need a different kind of wall mount, because the stand is kind of a kickstand, and you can't detach it. That's where the woofer is. So it will make the TV sit out from the wall by 2 or 3 inches, something like that. So that's what you might have to think about, a different kind of stand there. It might be a Visa stand or it might not. I don't quite remember. But it does give you the best sound, no question about it. Okay, I'm going to go right on. As soon as I can figure out which one of these has an arrow, there it is. It's number 3. It's Dean in Tehachapi. Dean, hey, welcome to the show.
Thanks, God. I've got a quick question for you. I have a man cave that I spent a lot of money in with a 75-inch Samsung TV.
Excellent.
One of my walls, on the other wall, I would like to put a TV just to have an American flag waving in the background, similar to what Tucker Carlson's on Fox News.
Oh, yeah.
In the background.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to do something with a flat screen. How do I do that?
Well, put a flat screen up there and find a Blu-ray or something that's just a waving American flag. I don't know if such a thing exists even. Maybe somebody in the chat room will be able to help us out here. You need some image of a waving American flag, and you put it into a TV. Couldn't be simpler, really.
Now, so it's a DVD?
Yeah, it would be a DVD, or really, depending on the TV you get, you can't really even buy standard definition TVs anymore. So hopefully there'd be one on a Blu-ray. I doubt there's probably one on a UHD Blu-ray yet, but Blu-ray, you might find one. That's all you need. It reminds me of the Blu-rays and the DVDs that are basically pictures of fireplaces, and they show the fire crackling, right? And that's all they are. And so that's meant for kind of an ambient thing. So maybe there's a waving American flag one. I don't actually know.
Okay.
Oh, look. Wow, they found one. Where did you find that?
YouTube.
Oh, YouTube. Okay, well, there you go. Even better. Just put that thing up there and point it at YouTube and find that waving flag, and there you go. And the fact that it's waving, that it's moving, is actually really good, because if you keep a static image on a screen too long, it'll tend to have what's called image retention. And so plasmas were most susceptible to that, and we don't have plasmas anymore. So LCDs are the least susceptible to that. And OLEDs are a little bit more, but still not nearly as bad as plasmas. So if this is really only going to be a waving flag, then get the cheapest TV you can find. And that's going to be an LCD TV. Now, there's one other caveat I want to give you, and that is, if you're watching a movie in a darkened man cave, such as you have, I would turn that thing off, because otherwise it's got white stripes and it's bright and it's going to pump light into the room. And so when you're actually watching a movie, turn it off. I assume this would more be for when people come over and you say, hey, come check out my man cave. And you got this thing. You got this thing running. Okay, that's cool.
Yes.
So just get the cheapest LCD TV you can get. Put it up there. Go to YouTube. You might, it'd probably be a smart TV. It'll probably have a YouTube app in it. That's almost ubiquitous. And just point it to that thing and do it. Good luck.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
You bet. My pleasure. It's Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Alex.
That's amazing.
Alex is on the ball.
Man, he is seriously on the ball. So I'm getting down. I'm getting funky. I hope you are too. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And somebody in the chat room just found a YouTube video of a waving flag that lasts 10 hours. So that's pretty cool. But right now I am going to go talk to who am I going to go talk to? Well, I guess I'm going to go talk to number one, because that's what I remember it being. This is Adam in L.A. Hey, Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, thanks. How can I help you?
Awesome. Well, I was wondering if there's a converter for a Sony tuner I have from the 2000s that doesn't have HDMI on it. I'm trying to get it connected to my Samsung LED HDTV.
Mm-hmm.
I have not had any luck with it.
Now, wait a second. You have a Sony tuner. Is it an over-the-air tuner?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it has, it has tape and CD and, connects to auxiliary.
Oh, you're talking about a receiver.
A receiver, yes. My apologies.
Okay. All right. So this is the AV receiver, which you connect all your components to, and then it sends a video signal to the TV, and it sends the audio out to your speakers.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you said it does not have HDMI?
It does not have HDMI.
Ugh. Well, I'm afraid, really, your best choice is to upgrade that AV receiver.
So the only thing I can do is just listen to you on the radio, right?
I'm afraid you have the Samsung. How old is your Samsung TV?
It's a couple years old.
Yeah, see, so it's got to have an HDMI signal coming in. It probably doesn't even have a composite or a component. Component is what you really want.
Yes.
And is it HD or UHD?
It's HD.
It's HD. It's only a couple years old.
Yes, sir.
But it's probably at the very...
I'm losing track of time. Could be 4 years old.
Okay, all right. Well, so the first thing you need to do is upgrade your AV receiver, I'm sorry to say. Now, maybe I'm sorry to say. I don't know. If you're like me, you like going shopping for new gear.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, exactly. So you will want to get... I would highly recommend that you get one that looks toward the future. So you need to get one that, obviously, any AV receiver you get today will have HDMI inputs and outputs. And what you really want is something that will be able to pass through 4K or Ultra HD. And so you want to make sure that the AV receiver can do that. Because eventually you're going to get a 4K TV and you're going to get a 4K source like an Ultra HD Blu-ray or a Roku Ultra or a Chromecast Ultra, one of these 4K streamers. And
I've been eyeballing them.
Yeah, exactly. And so you want your AV, you don't want your AV receiver to become obsolete as soon as you upgrade the rest of your system to 4K. So you need to start with the receiver, I think, and getting a receiver that can pass through 4K high dynamic range or HDR, that is important. And my favorite receiver brands, Sony is one of them, certainly. My favorite probably is Denon, but I'm perfectly happy with Sony, Pioneer, Yamaha, Marantz, which is also part of the Denon corporate family. All of those, Onkyo, all of those are going to do you fine. And depending on how much you're willing to spend, you can probably get in there certainly in the $500 to $1,000 range, in that rough range, even less in some cases. But you definitely want to get one that's fully 4K HDR capable so that when you do upgrade the rest of your system, the AV receiver won't be immediately obsolete.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you very much. Can
I
ask one more question regarding sound?
Sure.
My father had just recently given me a Denali speaker set, and the subwoofer, I have it on my hardwood floor, and it seems to sound like it's coming out of the trunk of a car. Is there anything I can put under it that would muffle the sound or...
Well, yeah, you got it on a hardwood floor, so that's pretty reflective. Is it up against a wall?
It's about 12 inches against the wall.
Okay, well, 12 inches is not against the wall. It's off the wall a little bit, so to speak. You know, I would say the best thing to do is to experiment with moving it around the room, trying different locations. But you're probably going to always have that if the floor is very reflective. You might try to put like a carpet or a rug of some sort in front of it. That'd probably be my first choice or my first suggestion to try. As well, otherwise, just moving it around different parts of the room. You might be coming up with what are called room modes or standing waves. And if you move it to a different location, that might very well change the situation, at least in your seating position. Have you listened to it in other positions around the room?
Yes, and it tends to want to rattle, you know, the things on the fireplace.
Well, okay, and then you might want to put some neoprene or some sort of absorbing material under the subwoofer itself if it's really shaking the floor and causing the stuff in the bookshelf to rattle around. That may be another thing you can do is to put it on a pad of some sort, neoprene or some other absorptive material to reduce that. And then maybe put a rug in front of it to see if that helps.
Sounds great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much for calling.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks. You too. All right. Let's see. Who is next? Let me look at my thing here. I cannot see who is next, so I'm just going to choose. Who am I going to talk to? Let's talk to... pushing all the buttons, right? I'm going to talk to Tracy in Manhattan Beach. Hey, Tracy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. I just bought the Costco OLED TV, the 65-inch one.
Mm-hmm. That would be the 65B7.
Correct. And I replaced my Pioneer Curo with it.
Oh, man, the Curo. I still have a Curo, which is 1080p. It's high definition, but plasma. But it was the best ever made.
It was. I made a good choice 9 years ago.
Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm. So my question to you, is it still necessary? Well, I've never even had it done, but it used to be necessary to have professional calibration done on a TV.
And the question is it still necessary?
Uh-huh.
It depends on how much of a geek you are, really. As I recall, I just did the C7. I just reviewed the C7. Which is essentially the same TV, but in a wider distribution. And I found that the best mode, picture mode out of the box, you know, you buy the TV, take it home, set it up, go into the menu system, and you can pick different picture modes. And there's one called standard, and there's one called vivid, and there's one called
cinema. You know,
cinema and all that stuff. Generally speaking, I recommend that you immediately go to the cinema mode. But my calibrator, Dave Abrams, and I discovered that really one of the ISF modes, ISF stands for Imaging Science Foundation, and the ISF expert parentheses dark room mode was the most accurate out of the box. And if you hang on a second, I'll finish that thought. Right now, I have to say, this is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, are you still with me?
I'm still with you.
Okay. Lawn Dog is asking in the chat room, is it wise to invest in calibration?
Good question.
And I'd like to address that with you when we get back on the air. So can you hang on?
I can.
All right. Stick around. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I am talking with Tracy in Manhattan Beach, who just bought a 65-inch OLED TV, for which I congratulate you. Great choice. Now, we were talking about calibration, and I mentioned that usually the cinema or picture mode, cinema picture mode or movie picture mode is going to be the best one out of the box. With this particular TV, I found that the ISF Expert Darkroom mode was the best out of the box. And it was pretty good, but it wasn't great. So this really comes down to the question of, do you want to spend the money on a professional calibration? And is it necessary? Well, is it necessary depends on partly on how picky you are. You know, are you pretty picky about the picture quality? You want it to really be as good as it possibly can?
It's cost-benefit ratio.
Always, isn't it? Yes, yes, indeed. Well, it's going to cost you several hundred dollars. So, you know, balance that against the cost of the TV, which was what, roughly?
About $4,000.
Okay, so another 10% of that to get the TV just tuned up to the nines and working beautifully.
And then what? That might not necessarily last forever also.
Oh, no, the calibration will hold for a good long time, unlike the old days. You sound like you might be referring to, you know, you calibrate a CRT TV and the analog electronics will drift after a while.
Exactly.
That's not the case here, okay, because we're talking digital electronics. So once you have it calibrated, it's going to hold that calibration for a good long time. So it's not something you're going to have to do several times. If it were me, I would do it. Well, I know how to do it myself, so I would do it myself. But I'm picky. I'm a home theater geek. I'm concerned with having the TV render and display for me as close as possible to what the director or the grader saw in their studio, in their grading suite, when they created the content. That's really important to me. So calibration will do that for you. The mode that I told you about on this particular OLED TV starts getting deficient in red as it gets brighter. And, you know, that's going to be more obvious on test patterns than it is on real content, but it will be evident on real content as well, more or less, depending on whether, you know, you're sensitive to such things. I am, so I would spend the money. It's another 10%. I would do it.
I think that answers the question. One other quick thing.
Sure.
It says 5 amps on the back of the TV, you know, at 120 volts.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be, what, almost 600 watts.
Mm.
And my old plasma was 534 watts. And this should not run anywhere near as hot as that, although I do find a little more warmth on it than I thought I'd see.
Well, yes, but it's not going to be as bad as a plasma. Many people talked about plasmas as being room heaters, and they were.
Oh, yeah, it was great in the winter, but I got rid of it just in time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is not going to be anywhere near that. I think I suspect that number on the back of the TV is like the absolute maximum it could possibly draw. Right. And for the most part, it's going to be a lot less than that.
Right.
So I wouldn't worry about it.
I was hoping.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks much, Scott.
You
bet.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for calling. All right. Then let's see here. Here we go. I'm going to go to line 6 and Richard in San Rafael. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. How you doing?
Great. Thanks.
Good. Hey, I'm trying to solve the problem of too many remotes.
The perennial problem, yes.
Exactly. And I figure, and actually the problem happens in software too. Like every component has their own app.
Yes.
You know, and so mm-hmm. you got to switch from app to really control things. I'd like to have everything in one place.
Mm-hmm.
I have an old Harmony 1000, Logitech Harmony 1000, which almost does the job. It has the activities, it has all the component database and everything like that.
It's my favorite universal remote, no question.
Yeah, and it passes spousal acceptance and everything. So it's great, but it doesn't have, the one thing it doesn't have is a TV guide. Like my TiVo, I have a TiVo,
mm-hmm.
which
great.
I use like as a video equivalent of AVR, where I can get video from all sorts of different sources and
mm-hmm.
And I have a guide, and I can, but mainly search, you know, and searching on anything like a DVR, any kind of DVR, where you have a little keyboard on the screen, you're going hunting and pecking. I don't like that. I'd rather just use a tablet with its own keyboard or have a separate keyboard for like searching for content. Right. So I'm looking for something that'll consolidate on the iPad app. And actually, you did a great job because you called the chat room to attention. They're already sending links through.
Yes. If you're watching the chat room, then you will see some of their answers. And boy, oh boy, is the chat room so helpful.
Oh, yeah. They're brain extensions.
Yes. Seriously. Yeah.
And they came up with, of course, Logitech is the kind of the obvious choice. And there's another one called Blue Moo, which I'm going to look into. And it has its own TV guide. I think it's going to come down to is I have one universal remote for the components with all the components in it, like the Logitech does, and then just have the TiVo app separately for the content.
You know, that's probably the best idea. And one reason is that most of your components are probably controlled by infrared, IR. And most tablets, the iPad in particular, doesn't have an IR emitter.
Right.
So in order to actually control the components from an iPad, you need either to have a gizmo that accepts Wi-Fi, so the iPad would communicate to this gizmo through your Wi-Fi network, and then the gizmo would blast out IR commands to your devices. Or you can get there's one thing called a Red Eye, which basically has a little IR dongle that you plug into the iPad or the iPhone for that matter, and it emits IR commands to the devices. RE is another one. RE with a line over it.
Yeah. What's interesting, Scott, is that all my devices, even my 9-year-old Denon receiver, all have internet or have an IP, so I can talk to them. But like I have like a the Denon app, the Oppo app.
Okay.
The Show app.
All right. And those are all on your iPad?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then since you've already got it set up so that all your devices are talking to each other through the internet rather than IR, that makes it a lot easier.
Exactly.
A lot easier. So a Digit is one that's D-I-J-I-T. These are being recommended on Gizmodo, which I really like quite a bit.
Okay.
iRule is another one. That I have heard of. I've never tried any of these because, to tell you the truth, I don't really like universal remotes or controlling my system with a touch screen. Yeah. I prefer physical buttons.
Yeah.
Now, looking at a guide like the TiVo Electronic Program Guide or EPG, you need a screen, right? But to turn it on or turn up the volume or change the channel or mute it or something like that, I'd rather have buttons that are physical that I can find by feel. Because as I look down at the iPad or some touch screen remote, it's going to be a lot brighter than the TV typically. So my eyes are going to close down a little bit. And then when I look up to it's just going to end up – it ends up annoying me. So I prefer the physical buttons there. That's just me.
Yeah, you know, no, I understand that. This is really for in-between activities. Like once you've picked your movie and everything, you shut down the app.
Yeah. Okay.
You enjoy the movie.
Well, I have heard a lot of good things about iRule. So
iRule. Okay.
I-R-U-L-E, iRule. So if you're already communicating with everything by Wi-Fi, that probably is a good choice. Let's see what else the chat room might have to say about it. Let's see. No, they're back on calibration mostly.
That's fine, Scott.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Scott. Thanks.
You bet. My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
So getting back to the question of calibration, which was the last call there, a couple people in the chat room are asking, how do you find a good one? How do you find a good calibrator? If you're going to spend that kind of money, there are a couple ways to do it. There are two bodies that certify calibrators. One is called ISF, Imaging Science Foundation, and they keep a list of calibrators that they've trained at imagingscience.org, and THX also certifies calibrators, and you can go to thx.com and probably find them there. Much more to come. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this. All right. Well, I think we have another message in a bottle from Leo somewhere somewhere from the world. Let's hear it.
Our show today, the Tech Guy Podcast, is sponsored by, brought to you by, as they used to say, Rocket Mortgage. Mortgages have changed a lot, right? But I think actually the whole world has changed a lot thanks to the internet. But in some cases, getting a home loan or refinancing your home is still kind of like back in the 19th century. Well, last time we bought our house about 3 years ago, and we went to a guy. He had a clipboard, and it had like this, like an inch and a half thick, a very thin paper, and he was thumbing his way through rates and stuff. And I practically felt like he had one of those green shade visors and sleeve garters on, big old calculator. It was like going back in time. Nowadays, there's a much better way. And I'll tell you what, if you're ready to get a home loan or you're looking for a refi, you got to go to the best lender in the world, Quicken Loans. I mean, they are so well known, number one in customer satisfaction across the board. And they have brought the mortgage lending process into the 21st century with Rocket Mortgage. It's simple, it's fast, it's transparent. You understand all the details. There's no mystery, and you're confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. And I love that. Rocket Mortgage has trusted partners, banks, so you don't have to go through paperwork. You know, you just press a button, and your bank statements is automatically sent to Rocket Mortgage, your pay stubs, whatever they need. All that financial information is simple. No more going through the attic to find stuff. Whether you're buying your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations, give you exactly the right loan. And they don't do it. Last time I bought a house, it took a month. They don't do it in a month. They don't do it in weeks. They don't do it in days. They do it in minutes because computers are fast, right? Based on your income, your assets, your credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all the home options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. It is a super system. Lift the burden of getting a home loan right now with Rocket Mortgage. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage with confidence at Rocket Mortgage. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. It's a new address. They got Rocket Mortgage. rocketmortgage.com/techguy, but it's still from Quicken Loans. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans for their support of the Tech Guy. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. All right. On with the show.
Hey, everybody. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's on vacation, and well-deserved, I should say. He'll be back next week, but in the meantime, we get to talk about audio and video, home theater, big screen TV, surround sound, Blu-ray, OLED TVs. We've been talking about all kinds of stuff today and having a great time doing it. If you want to get in on the conversation, it's very easy. All you have to do is call 8888-ASK-LEO. And for those of you who need the numbers, as I do, that's 888-827-5536. And we do have a couple open lines here. So if you got any questions about TVs or sound systems, sound bars, even going out to the movies. I got a lot to say about that as well, because I still like doing that. Even though I have a really nice home theater, going out to the movies does offer a few things that I really like quite a bit. But for the moment, we are going to continue answering calls. And I am going to go to Dan in Chatsworth. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hello there, Scott.
What can I do for you?
Yes, I am with Time Warner Cable, mm-hmm. which recently became Spectrum in this area.
Yep.
And we were given these new cable boxes. Now, on one of my TVs, which is an older rear projection, and I have this box connected to the HDMI input on the TV. And it worked for about a week. And now, every time I turn it on, it displays a message as an HDMI error, and it says that the HD content of my display has been compromised, and I should use the component input instead.
Whoa!
Do you have any idea what this is about and how I can fix it?
Well, that sounds kind of suspicious. I don't really know why that might be. The first thing I would do is power cycle the cable box.
Yeah, I have done that.
You have done that. Okay, I figured you might have, yeah.
Even the TV, I've tried different HDMI cable.
Mm. How long is the HDMI cable between the box and the TV?
It's a 6-foot cable.
Oh, that's not bad. Yeah, okay, yeah. That should work fine.
Right.
Wow. So the next thing I would do is contact Time Warner, Spectrum.
Yes, I've also done that, and what they suggested is just to use a different input component rather than the HDMI.
Well, let me ask you this. Does the TV have more than one HDMI input?
No, it only has one.
Only has the one, okay.
Yes, I also have one of these boxes connected to a different TV, which is a newer one. And we don't have a problem on that one.
I'm afraid it's the older TV, probably kind of choking on. And the cable box is relatively new, I think, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
HDMI should work perfectly well.
It worked for about a week with no issues at all.
Isn't that weird?
And all of a sudden it started displaying that message.
That sounds to me like Spectrum did something. They changed something.
Okay.
In a way that was incompatible with your older TV. What they did to change it wasn't incompatible with your newer TV.
Right.
The other thing I might try, since the older TV is, how old? It's got to be 9 or 10 years old at least.
10 years old, yeah.
10 years old. So does it have a component input?
It does.
Okay, have you tried that?
I haven't, but yeah.
It's not as good. Component is an analog connection between the cable box and the TV. And
right.
It actually uses three cables that are typically bundled together.
Right.
And so you have RCA connectors on either end.
Yes.
And so I would try that and see if that works. If it does, you're still going to get high definition. That rear projection TV is high definition, certainly not ultra HD.
Right.
So if it's a 1080p or a 720p TV, the component video signal will work just fine. And that's only sending video. It's not sending any audio. Do you have a different audio system, like a soundbar or an AV receiver with speakers, that kind of thing?
No, I don't.
Oh, it's all coming from the TV.
Yes.
So then if the component works,
uh-huh,
then you're going to have to also send another cable between the cable box and the TV, which carries the audio.
Exactly, right.
And that might be optical. That might be an optical connector.
It does not have an optical input, but just the RCA sound.
So right and left, the white and red little RCA connectors.
Right.
You know, that's the only thing I can think of is to try that and see if it works. If it does, then that's what you're going to have to live with, I think.
I see.
It sounds to me like Spectrum did something that said that the old TV says, I don't get what are you doing? I don't get that. There may be nothing you can do, I'm afraid, other than switch to component with a separate audio connector.
Okay. Okay, we'll try that.
Yeah, give it a shot.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. All right. Let's see. Let us go to Dave in San Diego. Dave, Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek. How are you?
Hey, Scott. Nice to speak with you.
And you. What can I do?
Yes. I was just going over some last minute details with your interview with Joe Kane about bias lighting.
Mm-hmm.
From the May 3rd interview you did on the ABS forum.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, is there a place you can go to buy some backlighting?
Absolutely.
With the eye strain.
Yeah.
Talk about specific levels, not being too bright, but to also give your eyes a break when you're in those environments.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, is it also something else that you talked about in the interview, which was the larger grayscale gamut, where I think he was talking either 12 or 14 bits, and now I think it's like 10 or 8, and how that will expand in the future and give us even greater performance in the black levels. Watching content, we can really see what's going on.
Right.
Than what we're seeing right now with ultra high definition.
Well, with high dynamic range.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about bias lighting. because that's really an important thing that not very many people know about or talk about. And I'm so glad you
brought it up.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you did, because it's really important, actually, particularly in a dark room. Now, if you're like me, you like to watch in a dark room. But that can lead to eye strain, especially now with high dynamic range TVs that are so much brighter than they used to be. And so what Joe Kane recommends, I recommend, a lot of people recommend, is what's called a bias light. And what that is it's a light. It's basic. Usually it's a fluorescent light. You put it behind the TV and it shines a light behind the TV, on the wall behind the TV. And that actually biases. You know how when you go from a dark theater into bright sunlight, your eyes kind of hurt, right? And you can't really see. Similarly, the other way around, you're out in the bright sunlight, you go into a dark theater, and you can't see anything. Everything's kind of dark for a little while until your eyes adapt. Your irises open and close. And so when you're watching TV in the dark, your irises are working harder than they need to, than they should be, I should say. And that's what leads to eye strain. So if you put a bias light behind the screen, that biases your eyes to open the irises to a certain amount that alleviates eye strain. So the important thing is to have that bias light be white, but be a certain color of white. You know how white, you look out in the world and you see white of several different colors. It might be yellowish, might be bluish. You want it to be a particular color of white, which is technically called D65. You also want it to be 10% of the brightness, the peak brightness of the TV. So not very bright, but something. The place to get them is a website called CinemaQuest, CinemaQuestInc.com. They sell bias lighting there, and I use it, and it works great. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this.
So that's CinemaQuest.com?
Yes, CinemaQuest Inc.
Oh, Inc.
CinemaQuest, I-N-C.
You know, I really would like to just talk with you maybe off the air.
Well,
as we're doing right now.
Go for it.
A minute.
Sure.
Great. Listen, I know that you're a big advocate for OLED. I have an old plasma screen from Panasonic. It's not quite as old as your Coral, but as you know, it was passed down after, I think, Panasonic bought Pioneer,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then they incorporated the technology into their plasmas until they gave up on the plasma technology.
Mm-hmm.
I've been waiting for OLEDs to mature to the point where they are right now, or maybe a little bit later into the future, because I'm really set on a 77-inch.
Oh.
But I wanted to ask you personally,
yeah.
Have you purchased an OLED screen? I know I read your review of the C7.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great review, and, you know, your man there who actually calibrated it for you, I know you say you have
Dave Abrams.
I don't have any doubt that you can calibrate your own, but when Abrams did it, he went on with the example. So I was wondering, do you have an OLED at home that you love and you just can't live without?
Well, I haven't bought one. I haven't bought one. And the reason is that I get them for review.
Right.
At the moment I have a Sony A1E at home, which is the 65A1E, XBR-65A1E. And it is a beautiful, beautiful OLED. Really the only thing there's two things I don't like about it. One is when it's sitting on a stand, when it's sitting on a table, not wall mounted, it leans back slightly.
Right.
Just by
I've
the
seen it at Best Buy at
yeah.
the that store.
Yeah, I don't like that. I'd prefer it to be straight up and down.
Gotcha.
But it makes a beautiful sound all by itself. The other thing I don't like about it is that when you calibrate it for standard dynamic range and then you calibrate it for high dynamic range, you have to do that in two different picture modes and then switch between them manually. The LGs do that all automatically. Now, fortunately, the Sony, you don't really need to calibrate the HDR mode. Once you've calibrated the SDR mode, HDR mode is really good. So it's not as big a problem as it sounds. Some of the parameters in the TV do switch automatically when you send it an HDR signal. And that's important. And the important ones change. I wish the calibration controls changed as well, that you could do a separate calibration, because being a geek, I want to perfect it. I want to make it absolutely perfect, or as close as I can get. And so it's unfortunate. I wish they did it the other way, but they do it. It's so good that you don't really need to. And otherwise, the set just looks wonderful. So I'd say either the Sony or the LG, either one. Gotcha. Are going to be just fine. If you're going to sit it on a table and on its own little stand, I'd probably say the LG, because the LGs are vertical. They sit up straight.
Gotcha. What about Joe's future prediction of the grayscale being boosted up to, I don't know what it is right now. Is it that 12-bit or 10-bit?
Well,
he said something about 14-bit.
Yeah, he's wishful thinking there, I'm afraid. It's going to happen at some point, but it's not going to be for years, I'd say.
And would you say it's mainly for projection systems as opposed to panels?
No, I'd say it would benefit either one.
Okay.
He wants a lot of bits, and I do too, but at the moment we're stuck at 10, and we're going to be there for a while.
I thought that this you might be waiting for. I didn't know that you actually made it clear that you were going to purchase one of these, or that you have a favorite and you have it at home and you enjoy it at home.
Yep.
So I get that point.
Okay, got to run. Thanks a lot.
By the way,
hang on. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And Dave is still with us, and he had one quick other question. Dave, what is that?
Yeah, that backlight. How much do you think it retails for from that?
CinemaQuest Inc. The actual device is called the Ideal Lum, IDEAL-LUME. And let me see if I can find it here. I can't. Let's see. Oh, they now have a media light. And let me see if I can buy that. And that's $50. So,
okay.
You know, we're talking 50 bucks ish. Not bad. And it really will help with eye strain.
Excellent. Thanks for your help.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Okay. Let's see. I'm going to go to Jerry in Pennsylvania. Hey, Jerry, Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. How can I help you?
Hello, Scott. Oh, wait, give me a second to wake up here.
I know. Sometimes you have to wait a while. I'm sorry about that.
That's no problem. Scott, I run a dart tournament on Sundays, and I wrote a nice spreadsheet that so everything happens by itself. I just put winners in there, and I'm going to run on a laptop. Now, it's not my laptop, but I want to cast it to a TV in the bar.
Hmm.
Without going... Now, I've been on the internet looking around. I can't find any definitive answers. Now, I don't know if the TV should have an extra HDMI input, and what do I use for casting?
Well, let me ask you a couple questions first. First of all, what laptop is it?
I don't know. It's not mine.
No. Well, is it Apple or is it Windows?
I'm going to find out tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Well, and then we need to know what the TV is.
Well, I think it's a Panasonic.
Okay. Well, if it's an Apple TV, then it's easy. You use an Apple protocol called AirPlay.
Okay.
And what you need is the chat room can help me on this, I think. But certainly any Apple laptop will have AirPlay built in, a modern one anyway.
And
then you need an Apple TV, which is a little device.
Okay.
It's a little box that connects to the TV itself. It's kind of confusing, the naming. But it connects to the TV itself with an HDMI cable, and then you can cast from the laptop to the Apple TV, and the Apple TV displays it on the actual TV.
Okay. Well, what if it's a Windows laptop and a Samsung or a Panasonic TV that runs through a system, you know, through a bunch of switches from their systems and through their... into the cabling system.
Yeah, that, you know, because it's a bar TV, this might be a problem. Right. And I'm not sure how to solve that because it's probably, you know, a pretty complicated system. If it's a Windows TV, My mistake. If it's a Windows laptop,
right,
then you could use a protocol called Miracast, M-I-R-A-C-A-S-T. Now, they have to, both ends of the system have to support Miracast. So if it's a, if it's a Windows TV, and believe me, I'm not as familiar with Windows as I am with Apple. I do know that Windows uses this thing called Miracast, and the TV needs to be familiar with it, and the laptop needs to be familiar with it. And if the TV isn't familiar with it, then you would need to get some sort of device that is and connects to the TV by HDMI. But if you, if the TV's in a bar and it's full of, it's this complicated system, how are you going to connect any little device to the TV?
Well,
I don't know.
You get the remote from the TV and you switch to a different input.
Okay, and where do you plug the input in? I mean, is it directly into that TV, or do they have like a patch bay, so to speak?
Well, I would think it, because I was not looking at the dongles at the, I forget what the name is, but you plug them into your TV.
Yep.
And then the, you plug it into a selected HDMI port. Then you would turn that on the TV. The thing is, I don't know enough about it. If I knew the TV and I knew the laptop, which I'll find out tomorrow, but apparently there's no easy solution to this.
Oh, you know what? Slow-mo in the chat room has just reminded me of another good solution, which is Chromecast.
Well, I looked at that.
Yeah? And what'd you find out?
Well, I didn't find out much about it. They have two different versions, and the cheaper version is not 4K. Of course, it's only a spreadsheet I'm putting on the TV.
Well, yeah, you don't necessarily need 4K. On the other hand, a spreadsheet typically has small little type. This would actually be a really good application for a 4K TV. But, of course, you don't have control of that because it's a, whatever the TV is in the bar, right? So
that's true, yeah. And they're not high-grade TVs.
Yeah, probably not.
Sports bar, yeah.
So it's probably 1080p, so you don't need the Chromecast Ultra. You can just go with a regular Chromecast, which is $35.
No, does that have to go through the router?
No. Well, it wirelessly, yes. I mean, it's it, any of these casting things go through the local network.
So, why can't it go right? Isn't that that Chromecast dongle? Isn't that a receiver?
It is.
And is, doesn't it connect directly to the laptop?
No. It connects wirelessly.
Why no? Wirelessly through the laptop through the
No. It connects through the network.
Through the Wi-Fi on the laptop. But so the laptop Wi-Fi goes to the router, then from the router to the TV.
To the Chromecast.
That's a pain in the butt. I have a different question for you.
Sure.
I got a Samsung TV, and I got a, like, when the screen goes all white, I get a, like a fuzzy gray cloud on it on a corner of the TV. And I Googled this stuff, and it says you put a cold an ice block on it, it'll go away, or you tap it lightly, it's still there.
How old is it?
Remedy.
How old is the TV?
About 3 years old.
Okay. And has this always been the case, or did it only show up recently?
I just noticed it within maybe 6-8 months.
Well, Samsung TVs use edge lighting. So the lighting, the illumination of the TV is along the edges, sometimes top and or bottom. And that can cause uneven, what we call poor uniformity on the TV. And if you just only noticed it and it had always been there, then I would say that's why it is. If it only appeared recently, I'd never heard of the putting ice on it. That's a good idea. That's an interesting idea. You might try it.
I Googled it.
Yeah. I've heard of people actually physically applying pressure, rubbing the screen. Use a microfiber cloth, please, because otherwise you'll scratch the screen. But I've heard of people actually kind of massaging their screens in order to make better uniformity. So you might try that. What the heck, huh?
It can't hurt.
Well, not as long as you use a microfiber screen, microfiber cloth.
when there's color there, you don't notice it. You only notice it when the screen goes all white.
Yeah, well, then I wouldn't worry too much about it. Hey, thanks for the call. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this. MillerTech, what is the difference between HDR10 and Dolby Vision? That's a really good question, MillerTech. How much time have I got? Oh, I've got time, I think. HDR10 and Dolby Vision are different formats of high dynamic range. HDR10 uses what's called static metadata. And for the entire program, be it a TV show or a movie, typically movies, there is one piece of information that says, what is the peak brightness, the absolute maximum brightness that was used to create this content? And another piece of information that says, what was the average brightness used to create this entire content? Just two little bytes, essentially, maybe a few bytes, but not very much information. That tells you, that tells the receiving device what was the maximum brightness that was used, and then the TV, the display, behaves accordingly. Dolby Vision uses what's called dynamic metadata, and it specifies the peak brightness and the average brightness down to every frame. So there's a lot more information. I think Dolby Vision looks better because of that. Because if you have only one peak brightness value for the entire program, then especially in like dark scenes that have nothing to do with that peak brightness, there will be some loss of shadow detail. I saw this in Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. When I looked at it on the Sony in HDR10, the shadow detail was not as good as I would have liked. And when I looked at it in Dolby Vision, it was actually better. So that is what I have to say about that. That is, I prefer Dolby Vision. However, I will say that HDR10 is what's used on Ultra HD Blu-ray and most streaming at this point. Dolby Vision is used in some streaming from Netflix, Vudu, and I believe Amazon. But it's not as widespread as HDR10. We don't have any UHD Blu-rays with Dolby Vision yet. Or the first ones, maybe the first ones are out, actually. They're the Despicable Me and Despicable Me 2. That's what is currently out. And we will see more. And I hope we do, because I prefer it. So let's see. Let's get right back to the calls while we can. I'm going to go to Eric in Montreal, Canada. Hey, Eric, welcome to the show. Oh, whoops. Sorry, got to push the right buttons. Eric, are you there? Hello, Eric.
I'm there, Scott. Can you hear me?
I can now. Now that I pushed the right buttons, how can I help you?
Might have been me. I'm driving, but I just pulled over so I can...
Oh, good.
Good. Hey, am I mistaken? You're the one who's playing the baritone.
I do play baritone, by golly. Baritone, euphonium. Are you a baritone player as well?
Well, not currently, but when I was in high school, I played the euphonium.
Euphonium.
I was pretty passionate about it. I'm glad to see you are as well.
Yeah, you and I could get into a serious discussion about what the difference between baritone and euphonium, but we'll lay politics aside. How can I help you with audio and video?
Well, that's my next passion, too, so we kind of fit. And I have an interesting problem that's been following me over the years, because I've always been a sports fan on TV. That's pretty much all I watch on TV. But, you know, sometimes sports are boring, and I like to put my own music or soundtrack or even a tech guy over the image. And as a tech guy myself, my friends all call me the tech guy. They call me T-Tech. I figured out a workaround, but it's so convoluted. I don't even want to get into it. I think you're my man, and you could probably shed some light on how I could watch golf and listen to my music. And I'm using my audio receiver, right? That's what I mean.
Okay, you have an audio-video receiver.
Splitting the signal, exactly.
And how old is the audio? Which audio receiver do you have?
So it's like a Pioneer, like a 1020, 1021, something like that. So about a good 5-6 years old.
It might not have this capability. I have seen this capability in some receivers, but not all by any means. And that is the ability to take the video from one of your devices, say your cable box or whatever, send it off to your TV, and take the audio from a different device. And
I would like, it's almost like a mixer. And in fact, that I did back in the day, I had a mixer, an audio mixer. And that was actually cool for listening to video games with my own soundtrack. So
right.
Loving that. But that's a huge piece that I added to my system.
Yeah. It's kind of a kludge.
So
there are some receivers that do that. I can't think of any off the top of my head. Let me see if I can find any real quick here.
I thought Denon maybe back in the day.
Denon.
Almost like, yeah, two knobs that you could turn. So you could choose your video source and then your audio source. Would be the best thing.
Yeah, exactly. There are, I can't think of any off the top of my head. Somebody in the chat room might very well know the answer to this, so I'm going to hopefully, they're going to hopefully come up with something. No, you don't want the sound of the TV. You don't want the sound of the video, the golf game or whatever. You just want the video from the golf and the audio from, say, some other device that's playing music.
Internet radio playing the tech guy.
Right, exactly. Rocket 88 says, my Yamaha AV for $200 lets you do that. So you might need to, the simplest solution is probably to get a new AV receiver that offers that capability. Not all of them do.
When I was shopping, I could not find one that seemed to, I seem to remember this, Denon, or how do you say it exactly?
Denon.
Denon, right.
Yeah.
That maybe had it, maybe it was too expensive at the time for my.
Well, Rocket 88 says he has one for $200 that does that. So it's from Yamaha. So I would say look at Yamaha receivers and see if you can find one that does what you need. I know they're out there. Sorry?
Would you dare want to hear my workaround and how I've been?
if it's quick, yeah.
Well, you know, there's a zone 2 on most receivers, right?
Of course.
That you ask like a different source to.
Yep.
So what I've been doing is kind of taking the output from zone 2 and then plugging it back into my receiver into another analog input for which I actually map it back to the TV source. So if you know what I mean by map, you can have different inputs.
Right.
Like, say I want to use the audio input.
Right.
The analog input for audio.
That is kind of a workaround. I'll say that for sure.
Yeah, I would need a serious macro on my universal remote.
Oh, man, serious. Oh, geez. Good Sound is saying most soundbars support separate Bluetooth connection, which you could switch to your audio source. So if you had a soundbar, which you don't, you have an AV receiver with speakers, right?
Yeah, no, and that's probably where I'll go to next is a soundbar, maybe a Sonos or something of the next. In fact, would you have any recommendations in those? Like, I know Sonos is the pioneer, but I'm not
Yeah, sure but it's pretty expensive. Sonos soundbar is very good, but it's pretty expensive. For less expensive ones, I like the Vizios. Let's see. Yamaha actually makes some excellent soundbars. So that would be another one. Another good possibility.
Have the same wireless kind of technology.
Yeah, Bluetooth.
I do like to wire speakers around my house. I have actually wires under the floor and through.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, and I'm trying to upgrade to the 21st century.
Most devices these days. Most devices these days are wireless. You know, there's the Sonos whole house system and so on and so forth.
But I like that it runs on Wi-Fi and not some sort of Bluetooth wireless or some.
Well, it's got to have Bluetooth in order to get. Well, it doesn't have to, but certainly if you have Bluetooth, a lot of phones and tablets and so on, you know, use Bluetooth primarily. A lot of them can stream on Wi-Fi as well, but most of these devices have Bluetooth so that you can stream to them directly to them from a phone easily. And then they can use Wi-Fi or your home network to distribute it out elsewhere. So,
yeah, of course, to get it there. But, you know, even Sonos, doesn't it rather run, like, say, Spotify or what it is on its own? So it's not really using your phone's battery as much. It's not dependent on your phone, I think.
Well, that's true. It doesn't have to be. But it can use the phone. If you have content on your phone that's specific to what you want to listen to, you should certainly be able to do that. Now, the Fat Vegan Chef Seems like an oxymoron, but okay. says, my Onkyo has that ability. Look for a receiver that has multiple audio inputs. Mm-hmm. Well, all receivers have multiple audio inputs. You just choose which audio input goes to that video. Now, again, not all receivers do have that capability.
Right.
In many cases, you select a source. It's maybe your cable box or whatever, and that will send the audio and the video both. To be able to select one video source and a different audio source is not necessarily a ubiquitous feature. So apparently Onkyo can do it. Yamaha can do it. So I would look along those lines.
Okay, that's great. Thanks a lot, Scott.
My pleasure.
It was a fun time to actually get it through to you guys. It wasn't so long a wait, and I'll leave a few questions for Leo when he gets back.
Excellent. Wonderful. I'm sure he'll be happy to hear from you.
Hey, thanks, Scott.
Thanks so much. All right, let's see. We got a little bit of time here. I'm going to go to number four, and that is Donald in L.A. Hey, Donald. Welcome to the show.
Scott, how are you?
Good, thanks. We don't have much time. Might have to carry over the break.
Okay, quick one then. I've got a couple of TVs, and when I listen to regular broadcast or cable, volume is fine. When I go to the internet, Netflix or Amazon, I got to run the volume all the way up to 100 to hear it.
Oof. And it happens on two different TVs. I've found this to be true as well. Different sources have different nominal volume levels. I don't think there's much you can do about it, unfortunately, other than run that volume up.
Okay.
Sorry.
Answer. Thank you.
If I think of anything else, I'll let you know, or if the chat room comes up with something. Thanks a lot for calling. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guide. Dickie DiBartolo coming up next. Stick around. Oh, yeah. Get down. Get funky. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And as always at this time of the show, I am more than happy to welcome our favorite Mad Magazine writer and giz whiz, that's Dick DiBartolo. Dickie D, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've been listening in. You sound like you're having one heck of a time.
Having a heck of a great time here. It's almost over, and I'm really sad about that.
Okay. Well, you were able to sneak me in here.
Yes, indeed.
And, you know, I went through all my gadgets. I'm thinking, what can I do? Home theater. He owns everything in the world. And then I thought, do you own your own mini marquee to put outside your home theater?
No, I do not.
Scott.
But I've seen these. They're cool.
First of all, they're ridiculously inexpensive. $21.
Really?
$21. And you get, the one I'm recommending is called Lorix, L-E-O-R-X. Actually, it's the second one I bought. It comes with 175 characters. So basically, what it is, it's a little bit bigger than a sheet of white paper. It's like 8 3/4 inches by almost 12 inches. Mm-hmm. And you use it in the landscape mode. It has three lines. And it comes with Lorix comes with 175 characters and symbols, and you make up your own little marquee. Like if you're having a party, you can say welcome and put people's names there.
Oh, yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. And the reason I picked that one, Amazon has, 6 or 7 varieties. But you want to get one that is more than battery powered. Like the two that I bought are both either battery powered by six AA batteries.
Okay.
And I started searching more because before I bought any, I was reading the reviews and people said, I love this thing, but it eats batteries like crazy. Mm-hmm. So as I went on, I found a lot of them are battery or USB operated. And so if they're USB operated, I'm sure any techie person has one of those little plugs.
Sure.
That go into the wall
and
then
power it, and you don't have to worry about running out of battery.
Exactly. So you have a lot of fun. You can slip the letters in and out. I change, if I have a guest coming over, I just say, welcome so-and-so.
Oh, that's so nice.
Take out the Gizwiz name.
I know a number of very high-end home theaters that actually use LCD TVs in that function.
Oh my.
You know, but that's...
Right.
That's hundreds of bucks at least.
Yeah. This is $21. I thought you were going to say that your friends had real movie marquees.
No. Okay. No, they use LCD TVs to put like movie posters.
Oh, what a great, yeah.
You know, which is a great thing. And so something less expensive that also put in, that also used, were allowed you to put in a graphics file, say. Do you know any of those?
I don't, but now that you mention it, you can get an LCD monitor nowadays, like when Newegg or something has a sale, $79.
Yeah.
And you're right. You could actually create your own, but it may not, it's probably not going to look as wonky as those old signs where the letters don't quite match up.
So this actually looks like you've plugged physical letters into the little stripey thing.
Actually, if you're on twit.tv, I have one of them over my shoulder.
Oh, there it is. So, welcome, Gizwiz on Twit. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that looks really cool, actually.
So they're great
for
fun.
$20.
$21.
Yeah.
$20.99.
Yeah. Wow. Well, now you've got me. I want to put one of those outside my theater.
Okay. Good. A success.
I like that. So much better than spending even a few $100. Now, the LCD TV would let you put a movie poster up there.
Yes, exactly.
But I'm not sure it would let you customize the text like that. That would take a little more.
This is good.
Yeah.
And just so it looks like an old-fashioned movie marquee, I have a tiny little ladder about that big.
Oh, that's so good.
Get up on the change the letters.
That's so good. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You've actually turned me on to something that I didn't know about, and I'm going to go get.
Good.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much. That's Dick DiBartolo, our friend Dickie D, Mad's maddest writer, and the Gizwiz of all at gizwiz.biz. Be sure to go to his website and stick around after the show today because we're doing the Gizfizz, aren't we?
Yeah, we are, and you're a guest on
it. And I'm a guest on it, so, boy, no rest for the wicked, that's for sure.
Perfect.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dick. Really appreciate it.
Take care.
See you soon. All right, one more question at least, and that is going to be Dave in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show.
How do you do? I'll be first to wish you a merry Tuba Christmas.
Thank you. Only 6 months to go, and Tuba Christmas is here again.
Okay. In case I don't catch you again.
Thank you.
So, I've been listening and learning a lot about dynamic range and the different systems. I don't have a real home theater, just a big old LCD TV and big stereo by amping and all that.
Sure.
Sound. Just two channel, but it seems to work. They mix movies for two channel.
Well, they mix them for surround, actually, but you're getting the two channel version, yeah.
Yeah, they still do a decent job with some channel, and I hope they don't quit. I mean, they do actually spend time in the studio with that. But my question is, with video cards with an HDMI output, would there be software that would allow you to, like the old-fashioned color bar, test pattern, grayscale, do your own calibration at home? But I guess it would have to emulate... The different expansion and metadata pieces, and those things might be copyrighted. Certain devices will put those out for calibration.
Yes, that's correct. You're talking about HDR, high dynamic range calibration.
Yeah.
That is still in its infancy. There are some test pattern generators that generate high dynamic range content. Test patterns. There's also a device called the HD Fury Integral, which you can add to a regular test pattern generator, and it will add HDR metadata to it and allow you to do it that way.
The software driving those video cards, it would have the dynamic range capability output, that software that could be done, but maybe that techniques are licensed or copyrighted?
You know, again, we're in the early, early stages, and I don't know exactly the way to do it with software on a computer.
I probably have to buy it or freeware or something.
Yeah, exactly. Except for full calibration, I would get a test disc like the HD Benchmark or Disney Wow if you're less astute, less technically inclined, to do a SDR calibration. HDR calibration, you really need to call in a professional. So yeah, that's it.
Just to get access to a calibrated signal.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Hey, that's it. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Hey, it's the end of the show today. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks so much for joining me. And as always, geek out.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.
We're off the air, Jay, but happy to help you.
Hey, great show. I'm really enjoying it.
Thank you.
I got a really hot TV set. It's a Sony 55-inch X930D.
Great TV.
And I've got a Neanderthal DVD player. Presently have.
And yeah.
I want to upgrade it, but I want to get one. I think the prices may have come down now. And I want to get one that can play Blu-ray, 3D, and regular DVDs. Is there such a thing?
Oh.
And also, what would you recommend?
Sure, there certainly is. I would absolutely recommend you get a UHD Blu-ray player. Which can play not only Blu-rays, DVDs, and 3D Blu-rays, but also Ultra HD Blu-rays. Because going forward, you're gonna buy movies on, if you buy movies on disc at all, you're gonna buy them on Ultra HD Blu-ray. At least I would certainly recommend that you do.
Particularly
with that TV that you've got, because Blu-ray and DVD simply do not take full advantage of that TV.
All right.
So, then we're into, okay, what Ultra HD Blu-ray player do you want to get? So then the next question is, what's your budget? How much are you willing to spend?
Whatever it takes. I want to get a good one. Hey, I spent a boatload on the TV.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would definitely recommend then the Oppo, O-P-P-O. It's called the UDP-203. It lists for $550, so it ain't cheap.
Okay.
But it is, in my opinion, the best one out there, because not only does it play Ultra HD Blu-ray, regular Blu-ray, 3D Blu-ray, DVD, CD, but it also plays these audiophile formats. And I don't know if you're an audiophile or not. The last guy I was talking to said he had a two-channel bi-amped system, so he was definitely an audiophile. But it'll also play two other formats called DVD audio and SACD. And SACD. And both of those are what are called high resolution audio. So the audio specs of the digital data that's on those discs is better. The specs are better. Thank you for using the correct verb. Than CD. And okay. So the problem is you're not going to necessarily hear a significant improvement unless you have the equipment that can reproduce the greater frequency range and dynamic range of those formats. If you don't, it still doesn't matter. Get the Oppo anyway, in my opinion. Because it's what's called a universal disc player, and it can play everything. anything and everything. And it's Oppo is great quality, great customer service. They're always updating the firmware. It's a great company, and it's the player I recommend to those who can afford $550 for a player. As you say, you spend a lot more than that on the TV.
Yes.
So if you can, you know, if you can lay out another $550, you're not going to be disappointed.
Okay. The last question: would this TV benefit from a pro calibration?
You know, I haven't looked at it myself, so I can't say for sure. But if you're looking at getting the most out of it that you can, I would say probably so. Sony TVs are very good, and even the Sony OLED, which is the last Sony I looked at recently, it was looking really good out of the box without a calibration. We calibrated it anyway, but
this one is really good on certain channels. Mm. Other channels are not. But
well, that has to do with what the broadcaster is sending out. And that, you know, you can't control that. So, you know, what about on, let me ask you this. What picture mode did you select? Did you go into the menu system?
I did, but it would be tough for me to remember.
Okay, well, definitely you want to pick something like movie or cinema. I forget what Sony calls it. It's one of those two. Pick the movie or cinema mode, or if it has what's called an ISF expert mode, pick one of those. If it has that, it'll have two of them. That'll be dark room and bright room. And are you watching it in a bright room or a dark room?
I think I did set that one up for a bright room.
Okay. Those two will probably be quite accurate out of the box as well.
Okay.
So that either one of those or the movie or cinema mode, and you'll be fine. Once you get that Oppo player, you can take it to the next level by yourself by getting a disc called HD Benchmark or Disney Wow or Digital Video Essentials HD Basics. Any one of those three discs will, and they cost like $20-$30 on Amazon, something like that. And either any one of those discs will take you through the process of setting up the basic user controls, which are brightness, contrast, color, tint, sharpness.
Okay, got it.
And that takes you typically 70-80% of the way towards the absolute best the TV can do.
Well, that's a great TV. I really like it.
Oh, yeah.
But but my discs are like...
Oh, man. What's the player you have now?
Oh, God, I don't know. It runs on matchsticks.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. Get that Oppo, man. That thing is awesome. I have one, and it loads quick. I love everything about it.
Oppo UDP as a Uniform Delta Papa.
I believe so. You're going all military on me here.
That's all I know.
That's all you know. Okay, let me just quickly make sure that that's right, because they all come with, they all have slightly different. Yeah, UDP, Uniform Delta Papa, 203. Now, if you were true audiophile and you wanted, you know, super duper audio performance, you'd get the UDP 205, which is $1,300.
Yeah, my ears are probably not.
you and me both, pal.
Yeah, high freaks left the wall.
They're gone. Yeah, so I'd go with the 203.
Yeah. Besides that, I got a Bose surround sound, which is no highs, no lows.
Yeah, must be Bose. Yeah. Well, that'd be the next thing I'd upgrade then.
Well, it's okay for my hearing ability. So
yeah, all right, that's fine.
Probably soon. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I really enjoyed your show, and I hope you come back soon.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay, take care. Thanks.